Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Chapter 13 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 13, The Loss of the Black Bag. Kiki Aru, in the form of the Li Mun Eeg, had scrambled into the high, thick branches of the tree so no one could see him, and there he opened the wizard's black bag, which he had carried away in his flight. He was curious to see what the wizard's magic tools looked like, and hoped he could use some of them and so secure more power. But after he had taken the articles one by one from the bag, he had to admit they were puzzles to him, for unless he understood their uses, they were of no value whatever. Kiki Aru, the high-up boy, was no wizard or magician at all, and could do nothing unusual except to use the magic word he had stolen from his father on Mount Munch. So he hung the wizard's black bag on a branch of the tree, and then climbed down to the lower limbs that he might see what the victims of his transformations were doing. They were all on top of the flat rock, talking together in tones so low that Kiki could not hear what they said. "This is certainly a misfortune," remarked the wizard in the fox's form, "but our transformations are a sort of enchantment which is very easy to break, when you know how and have the tools to do it with. The tools are in my black bag, but where is the bag?" No one knew that, for none had seen Kiki Aru fly away with it. "Let's look and see if we can find it," suggested Dorothy the Lamb. So they left the rock, and all of them searched the clearing high and low without finding the bag of magic tools. The goose searched as earnestly as the others, for if he could discover it, he might hide it where the wizard could never find it, because if the wizard changed him back to his proper form along with the others, he would then be recognized as Ruggedo the Gnome, and they would send him out of the Land of Oz and ruin all his hopes of conquest. Ruggedo was not really sorry, now that he thought about it, at Kiki had transformed all of these Oz folks. The forest beasts, it was true, had been so frightened that they would now never consent to be transformed into men. But Kiki could transform them against their will, and once they were all in human forms, it would not be impossible to induce them to conquer the Oz people. So all was not lost, thought the old gnome, and the best thing for him to do was to rejoin the high-up boy who had the secret of the transformations. So, having made sure the wizard's black bag was not in the clearing, the goose wandered away through the trees when the others were not looking, and when out of their hearing he began calling, "Kiki Aru! Kiki Aru! Quack, quack! Kiki Aru!" The boy and the woman, the fox, the lamb, and the rabbit, not being able to find the bag, went back to the rock, all feeling exceedingly strange. "Where's the goose?" asked the wizard. "He must have run away," replied Dorothy. "I wonder who he was." "I think," said Gugu the King, who was the fat woman, "that the goose was the stranger who proposed that we war upon the Oz people. If so, His transformation was merely a trick to deceive us, and he has now gone to join his comrade, that wicked Limonig, who obeyed all his commands." "What shall we do now?" asked Dorothy. "Shall we go back to the Emerald City as we are, and then visit Glinda the Good and ask her to break the enchantments?"
"I think so," replied the Wizard Fox.
"And we can take Gugu the King with us, and have Glinda restore him to his natural shape. But I hate to leave my bag of magic tools behind me, for without it I shall lose much of my power as a wizard. Also, if I go back to the Emerald City in the shape of a fox, the Oz people will think I'm a poor wizard, and will lose their respect for me."
"Let us make still another search for your tools," suggested the Cowardly Lion. "And then, if we fail to find the black bag anywhere in this forest, we must go back home as we are."
"Why did you come here anyway?" inquired Gugu.
"We wanted to borrow a dozen monkeys to use on Ozma's birthday," explained the wizard. "We were going to make them small and train them to do tricks and put them inside Ozma's birthday cake."
"Well," said the Forest King, "you would have to get the consent of Rango the Gray Ape to do that. He commands all the tribes of monkeys."
"I'm afraid it's too late now," said Dorothy regretfully. "It was a splendid plan, but we've got troubles of our own, and I don't like being a lamb at all."
"You're nice and fuzzy," said the Cowardly Lion.
"That's nothing," declared Dorothy. "I've never been specially proud of myself, but I'd rather be the way I was born than anything else in the whole world." The Glass Cat, although it had some disagreeable ways and manners, nevertheless realized that Trot and Cap'n Bill were its friends, and so was quite disturbed at the fix it had gotten them into by leading them to the Isle of the Magic Flower. The ruby heart of the Glass Cat was cold and hard, but it still was a heart, and to have a heart of any sort is to have some consideration for others. But the queer, transparent creature didn't want Trot and Cap'n Bill to know it was very sorry for them, and therefore it moved very slowly until it had crossed the river and was out of sight among the trees of the forest. Then it headed straight toward the Emerald City and trotted so fast that it was like a crystal streak crossing the valleys and plains. Being glass, the cat was tireless, and with no reason to delay its journey, it reached Ozma's palace in wonderfully quick time.
"Where's the wizard?" it asked the pink kitten, which was curled up in the sunshine on the lowest step of the palace entrance.
"Don't bother me," lazily answered the pink kitten, whose name was Eureka.
"I must find the wizard at once," said the Glass Cat.
"Then find him," advised Eureka, and went to sleep again. The Glass Cat darted up the stairway and came upon Toto, Dorothy's little black dog.
"Where's the wizard?" asked the cat.
"Gone on a journey with Dorothy," replied Toto.
"When did they go, and where have they gone?" demanded the cat.
"They went yesterday, and I heard them say they would go to the great forest in the Munchkin Country."
"Dear me," said the Glass Cat, "that is a long journey."
"But they rode on the Hungry Tiger and the Cowardly Lion," explained Toto, "and the wizard carried his black bag of magic tools." The Glass Cat knew the great forest of Gugu well, for it had traveled through this forest many times in its journeys through the Land of Oz. And it reflected that the forest of Gugu was nearer to the Isle of the Magic Flower than the Emerald City was, and so, if it could manage to find the wizard, it would lead him across the Gillikin Country to where Trot and Cap'n Bill were prisoned. It was a wild country, and little traveled, but the Glass Cat knew every path, so very little time need be lost after all. Without stopping to ask any more questions, the cat darted out of the palace and away from the Emerald City, taking the most direct route to the Forest of Gugu. Again the creature flashed through the country like a streak of light, and it would surprise you to know how quickly it reached the edge of the great forest. There were no monkey guards among the trees to cry out a warning, and this was so unusual that it astonished the Glass Cat. Going farther into the forest, it presently came upon a wolf, which at first bounded away in terror. But then, seeing it was only a Glass Cat, the wolf stopped, and the cat could see it was trembling as if from a terrible fright. "What's the matter?" asked the cat.
"A dreadful magician has come among us," exclaimed the wolf, "and he's changing the forms of all the beasts quick as a wink, and making them all his slaves."
The Glass Cat smiled and said,
"Why, that's only the Wizard of Oz. He may be having some fun with you forest people, but the wizard wouldn't hurt a beast for anything."
"I don't mean the wizard," explained the wolf. "And if the Wizard of Oz is that funny little man who rode a great tiger into the clearing, he's been transformed himself by the terrible magician."
"The wizard transformed? Why, that's impossible," declared the Glass Cat.
"No, it isn't. I saw him with my own eyes, changed into the form of a fox, and the girl who was with him was changed to a woolly lamb."
The Glass Cat was indeed surprised.
"When did that happen?" it asked.
"Just a little while ago in the clearing. All the animals had met there, but they ran away when the magician began his transformations, and I'm thankful I escaped with my natural shape. But I'm afraid, and I'm going somewhere to hide."
With this the wolf ran on, and the Glass Cat, which knew where the big clearing was, went toward it. But now it walked more slowly, and its pink brains rolled and tumbled around at a great rate, because it was thinking over the amazing news the wolf had told it. When the Glass Cat reached the clearing, it saw a fox, a lamb, a rabbit, a munchkin boy, and a fat Gillikin woman, all wandering around in an aimless sort of way, for they were again searching for the black bag of magic tools. The cat watched them for a moment, and then it walked slowly into the open space.
At once the lamb ran toward it, crying, "Oh, wizard, here's the Glass Cat."
"Where, Dorothy?" asked the fox.
"Here."
The boy and the woman and the rabbit now joined the fox and the lamb, and they all stood before the Glass Cat, and speaking together, almost like a chorus, asked,
"Have you seen the black bag?"
"Often," replied the Glass Cat, "but not lately."
"It's lost," said the fox, "and we must find it."
"Are you the wizard?" asked the cat.
"Yes."
"And who are these others?"
"I'm Dorothy," said the lamb.
"I'm the Cowardly Lion," said the Munchkin Boy.
"I'm the Hungry Tiger," said the rabbit.
"I'm Gugu, King of the Forest," said the fat woman.
The Glass Cat sat on its hind legs and began to laugh.
"My, what a funny lot," exclaimed the creature. "Who played this joke on you?"
"It's no joke at all," declared the wizard.
"It was a cruel, wicked transformation, and the magician that did it has the head of a lion, the body of a monkey, the wings of an eagle, and a round ball on the end of its tail."
The Glass Cat laughed again.
"Hee, that magician must look funnier than you do," it said. "Where is he now?"
"Somewhere in the forest," said the Cowardly Lion. "He just jumped into that tall maple tree over there, for he can climb like a monkey and fly like an eagle, and then he disappeared in the forest."
"And there was another magician just like him who was his friend," added Dorothy.
"But they probably quarreled, for the wickedest one changed his friend into the form of a goose."
"What became of the goose?" asked the cat, looking around.
"He must have gone away to find his friend," answered Gugu the king. "But a goose can't travel very fast, so we could easily find him if we wanted to."
"The worst thing of all," said the wizard, "is that my black bag is lost. It disappeared when I was transformed. If I could find it, I could easily break these enchantments by means of my magic, and we would resume our own forms again. Will you help us search for the black bag, friend cat?"
"Of course," replied the Glass Cat. "But I expect the strange magician carried it away with him. If he's a magician, he knows you need that bag, and perhaps he's afraid of your magic. So he's probably taken the bag with him, and you won't see it again unless you find the magician."
"That sounds reasonable," remarked the Lamb, which was Dorothy. "Those pink brains of yours seem to be working pretty well today."
"If the Glass Cat is right," said the Wizard in a solemn voice, "there's more trouble ahead of us. That magician is dangerous, and if we go near him he may transform us into shapes not as nice as these."
"I don't see how we could be any worse off," growled
Gugu, who was indignant because he was forced to appear in the form of a fat woman.
"Anyway," said the Cowardly Lion, "our best plan is to find the magician and try to get the black bag from him. We may manage to steal it, or perhaps we can argue him into giving it to us."
"Why not find the goose first?" asked Dorothy. "The goose will be angry at the magician, and he may be able to help us."
"That isn't a bad idea," returned the Wizard. "Come on, friends, let's find that goose. We will separate and search in different directions, and the first to find the goose must bring him here, where we will all meet again in an hour."
End of chapter 13.
Chapter 14 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 14. The Wizard Learns the Magic Word. Now the goose was the transformation of old Ruggedo, who was at one time king of the gnomes. And he was more even angry at Kiki-Aru than were the others whose shapes had been changed. The gnome detested anything in the way of a bird, because birds lay eggs, and eggs are feared by all the gnomes more than anything else in the world. A goose is a foolish bird, too, and Ruggedo was dreadfully ashamed of the shape he was forced to wear. And it would make him shudder to reflect that the goose might lay an egg. So the gnome was afraid of himself, and afraid of everything around him. If an egg touched him, he would then be destroyed, and almost any animal he met in the forest might easily conquer him, and that would be the end of old Ruggedo the gnome. Aside from these fears, however, he was filled with anger against Kiki, whom he had meant to trap by cleverly stealing from him the magic word. The boy must have been crazy to spoil everything the way he did, but Ruggedo knew that the arrival of the wizard had scared Kiki, and he was not sorry the boy had transformed the wizard and Dorothy and made them helpless. It was his own transformation that annoyed him and made him indignant. So he ran about the forest hunting for Kiki so that he might get a better shape and coax the boy to follow his plans to conquer the land of Oz. Kiki-Aru hadn't gone very far away, for he had surprised himself as well as the others by the quick transformations and was puzzled as to what to do next. Ruggedo the gnome was overbearing and tricky, and Kiki knew he was not to be depended on, but the gnome could plan and plot, which the high-up boy was not wise enough to do, and so when he looked down through the branches of a tree and saw a goose waddling along below and heard it cry out, "Kiki-Aru, quack, 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 Kiki-Aru," the boy answered in a low voice, "Here I am," and swung himself down to the lowest limb of the tree. The goose looked up and saw him.
"You've bungled things in a dreadful way," exclaimed the gnome. "Why did you do it?"
"Because I wanted to," answered Kiki.
You acted as if I was your slave, and I wanted to show these forest people that I am more powerful than you." The goose hissed softly, but Kiki did not hear that.
Old Ruggedo quickly recovered his wits and muttered to himself, "This boy is the goose, although it is I who wear the goose's shape. I will be gentle with him now, and fierce with him when I have him in my power." Then he said aloud to Kiki, "Well, hereafter I will be content to acknowledge you the master. You bungle things, as I said, but we can still conquer Oz."
"How?" asked the boy.
"First, give me back the shape of the Limon Eeg, and then we can talk together more conveniently," suggested the gnome.
"Wait a moment, then," said Kiki, and climbed higher up the tree. There he whispered the magic word, and the goose became a Limon Eeg as he had been before.
"Good," said the gnome, well pleased, as Kiki joined him by dropping down from the tree. "Now let us find a quiet place where we can talk without being overheard by the beasts." So the two started away and crossed the forest until they came to a place where the trees were not so tall nor so close together, and among these scattered trees was another clearing, not as large as the first one where the meeting of the beasts had been held. Standing on the edge of this clearing and looking across it, they saw the trees on the farther side full of monkeys, who were chattering together at a great rate of the sights they had witnessed at the meeting. The old gnome whispered to Kiki not to enter the clearing or allow the monkeys to see them.
"Why not?" asked the boy, drawing back.
"Because these monkeys are to be our army, the army which will conquer Oz," said the gnome. "Sit down here with me, Kiki, and keep quiet, and I will explain to you my plan." Now, neither Kiki Aru nor Ruggedo had noticed that a sly fox had followed them all the way from the tree where the goose had been transformed to the Limon Eeg. Indeed, this fox, who was none other than the Wizard of Oz, had witnessed the transformation of the goose, and now decided he would keep watch on the conspirators and see what they would do next. A fox can move through a forest very softly without making any noise, and so the wizard's enemies did not suspect his presence. But when they sat down by the edge of the clearing to talk with their backs toward him, the wizard did not know whether to risk being seen by creeping closer to hear what they said, or whether it would be better for him to hide himself until they moved on again. While he considered this question, he discovered near him a great tree which had a hollow trunk, and there was a round hole in this tree, about 3 feet above the ground. The wizard fox decided it would be safer for him to hide inside the hollow tree, so he sprang into the hole and crouched down in the hollow, so that his eyes just came to the edge of the hole by which he had entered, and from here he watched the forms of the two Limon Eegs. "This is my plan," said the gnome to Kiki, speaking so low that the wizard could only hear the rumble of his voice. "Since you can transform anything into any form you wish, we will transform these monkeys into an army, and with that army we will conquer the Oz people."
"The monkeys won't make much of an army," objected Kiki.
"We need a great army, not a numerous one," responded the gnome. "You will transform each monkey into a giant man, dressed in a fine uniform and armed with a sharp sword. There are 50 monkeys over there, and 50 giants would make as big an army as we need."
"What will they do with the swords?" asked Kiki. "Nothing can kill the Oz people."
"True," said Ruggedo. "The Oz people cannot be killed, but they can be cut into small pieces, and while every piece will still be alive, we can scatter the pieces around so that they will be quite helpless. Therefore,
The Oz people will be afraid of the swords of our army, and we will conquer them with ease."
"That seems like a good idea," replied the boy approvingly. "And in such a case, we need not bother with the other beasts of the forest."
"No, you have frightened the beasts, and they would no longer consent to assist us in conquering Oz. But these monkeys are foolish creatures, and once they are transformed to giants, they will do just as we say, and obey our commands. Can you transform them all at once?"
"No, I must take one at a time," said Kiki.
"But the 50 transformations can be made in an hour or so. Stay here, Ruggedo, and I will change the first monkey, that one to the left on the end of the limb, into a giant with a sword."
"Where are you going?" asked the gnome.
"I must not speak the magic word in the presence of another person," declared Kiki, who was determined not to allow his treacherous companion to learn his secret. "So I will go where you cannot hear me." Ruggedo the gnome was disappointed, but he hoped still to catch the boy unawares and surprise the magic word. So he merely nodded his lion head, and Kiki got up and went back into the forest a short distance. Here he spied a hollow tree, and by chance it was the same hollow tree in which the Wizard of Oz, now in the form of a fox, had hidden himself. As Kiki ran up to the tree, the fox ducked its head, so that it was out of sight in the dark hollow beneath the hole. And then Kiki put his face into the hole and whispered, "I want that monkey on the branch at the left to become a giant man, 50 feet tall, dressed in a uniform and with a sharp sword. Pierzuck Wixle." Then he ran back to Ruggedo, but the wizard fox had heard quite plainly every word that he had said. The monkey was instantly transformed into the giant, and the giant was so big that as he stood on the ground, his head was higher than the trees of the forest. The monkeys raised a great chatter, but did not seem to understand that the giant was one of themselves.
"Good!" cried the gnome. "Hurry, Kiki, and transform the others."
So Kiki rushed back to the tree and, putting his face to the hollow, whispered, "I want the next monkey to be just like the first, Pierzuck-Wixle." Again the wizard fox heard the magic word and just how it was pronounced. But he sat still in the hollow and waited to hear it again, so it would be impressed on his mind and he would not forget it. Kiki kept running to the edge of the forest and back to the hollow tree again until he had whispered the magic word 6 times and 6 monkeys had been changed to 6 great giants. Then the wizard decided he would make an experiment and use the magic word himself. So while Kiki was running back to the gnome, the fox stuck his head out of the hollow and said softly, "I want that creature who is running to become a hickory nut, Pierzuck-Wixle." Instantly, the Lee-Mon-Eag form of Kiki-Aru the High-Up disappeared, and a small hickory nut rolled upon the ground a moment and then lay still. The wizard was delighted and leaped from the hollow just as Ruggedo looked up to see what had become of Kiki. The gnome saw the fox, but no Kiki, so he hastily rose to his feet. The wizard did not know how powerful the queer beast might be, so he resolved to take no chances. "I want this creature to become a walnut, Pierzuck-Wixle," he said aloud, but he did not pronounce the magic word in quite the right way, and Ruggedo's form did not change. But the gnome knew at once that Pierzuck-Wixle was the magic word, so he rushed at the fox and cried, "I want you to become a goose, Pierzuck-Wixle." But the gnome did not pronounce the word aright either, having never heard it spoken but once before, and then with a wrong accent. So the fox was not transformed, but it had to run away to escape being caught by the angry gnome. Ruggedo now began pronouncing the magic word in every way he could think of, hoping to hit the right one, and the fox, hiding in a bush, was somewhat troubled by the fear that he might succeed. However, the wizard, who was used to magic arts, remained calm and soon remembered exactly how Kiki Aru had pronounced the word. So he repeated the sentence he had before uttered, and Ruggedo the gnome became an ordinary walnut. The wizard now crept out from the bush and said, "I want my own form again, Pirzqxgl." Instantly he was the Wizard of Oz, and after picking up the hickory nut and walnut and carefully placing them in his pocket, he ran back to the big clearing. Dorothy the Lamb uttered a bleat of delight when she saw her old friend restored to his natural shape. The others were all there, not having found the goose. The fat Gillikin woman, the Munchkin boy, the rabbit, and the Glass Cat crowded around the wizard and asked what had happened. Before he explained anything of his adventure, he transformed them all, except, of course, the Glass Cat, into their natural shapes. And when their joy permitted them to quiet somewhat, he told them he had by chance surprised the magician's secret and been able to change the two Limoneagues into shapes that could not speak and therefore would be unable to help themselves. And the little wizard showed his astonished friends the hickory nut and the walnut to prove that he had spoken the truth. "But see here," exclaimed Dorothy, "what has become of those giant soldiers who used to be monkeys?" "I forgot all about them," admitted the wizard, "but I suppose they are still standing there in the forest." End of chapter 14. Chapter 15 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 15 The Lonesome Duck. Trot and Cap'n Bill stood before the magic flower, actually rooted to the spot. "Aren't you hungry, Cap'n?" asked the little girl with a long sigh, for she had been standing there for hours and hours. "Well," replied the sailor man, "I ain't saying as I couldn't eat, Trot, if a dinner was handy, but I guess old folks don't get as hungry as young folks do."
"I'm not sure about that, Cap'n Bill," she said thoughtfully. "Age might make a difference, but seems to me size would make a bigger difference. Seeing you're twice as big as me, you ought to be twice as hungry." "I hope I am," he rejoined, "for I can stand it a while longer. I do hope the Glass Cat will hurry, and I hope the wizard won't waste time a-coming to us." Trot sighed and watched the wonderful magic flower, because there was nothing else to do. Just now a lovely group of pink peonies budded and bloomed, and soon they faded away, and a mass of deep blue lilies took their place. Then some yellow chrysanthemums blossomed on the plant, and when they had opened all their petals and reached perfection, they gave way to a lot of white floral balls spotted with crimson, a flower Trot had never seen before. "But I get awful tired watching flowers and flowers and flowers," she said impatiently.
"They're mighty pretty," observed Cap'n Bill.
"I know. And if a person could come and look at the magic flower just when she felt like it, it would be a fine thing. But to have to stand and watch it, whether you want to or not, isn't so much fun. I wish, Cap'n Bill, the thing would grow fruit for a while instead of flowers." Scarcely had she spoken when the white balls with crimson spots faded away, and a lot of beautiful ripe peaches took their place. With a cry of mingled surprise and delight, Trot reached out and plucked a peach from the bush and began to eat it, finding it delicious. Cap'n Bill was somewhat dazed at the girl's wish being granted so easily, so before he could pick a peach, they had faded away, and bananas took their place.
"Grab one, Cap'n!" exclaimed Trot, and even while eating the peach, she seized a banana with her other hand and tore it from the bush. The old sailor was still bewildered. He put out a hand indeed, but he was too late, for now the bananas disappeared and lemons took their place.
"Pshaw!" cried Trot. "You can't eat those things. But watch out, Cap'n, for something else."
Coconuts next appeared, but Cap'n Bill shook his head.
"Can't crack 'em," he remarked, "'cause we haven't anything handy to smash 'em with."
"Well, take one anyhow," advised Trot.
But the coconuts were gone, and a deep purple pear-shaped fruit, which was unknown to them, took their place. Again Cap'n Bill hesitated, and Trot said to him,
"You ought to have captured a peach and a banana, as I did.
If you're not careful, Cap'n, you'll miss all your chances. Here, I'll divide my banana with you." Even as she spoke, the magic plant was covered with big red apples growing on every branch, and Cap'n Bill hesitated no longer. He grabbed with both hands and picked two apples, while Trot only had time to secure one before they were gone.
"It's curious," remarked the sailor, munching his apple, "how these fruits keep good when you've picked 'em, but disappear into thin air if they're left on the bush."
"The whole thing is curious," declared the girl, "and it couldn't exist in any country but this, where magic is so common. Those are limes. Don't pick 'em, for they'd pucker up your mouth. And, ooh, here come plums." And she tucked her apple in her apron pocket and captured three plums, each one almost as big as an egg, before they disappeared. Cap'n Bill got some, too, but both were too hungry to fast any longer, so they began eating their apples and plums and let the magic bush bear all sorts of fruits, one after another. The cap'n stopped once to pick a fine cantaloupe, which he held under his arm, and Trot, having finished her plums, got a handful of cherries and an orange. But when almost every sort of fruit had appeared on the bush, the crop ceased and only flowers as before bloomed upon it.
"I wonder why it changed back," mused Trot, who was not worried, because she had enough fruit to satisfy her hunger.
"Well, you only wished it would bear fruit for a while," said the sailor, "and it did. Perhaps if you'd said forever, Trot, it would have always been fruit."
"But why should my wish be obeyed?" asked the girl. "I'm not a fairy or a wizard or any kind of a magic maker."
"I guess," replied Cap'n Bill, "that this little island is a magic island, and any folks on it can tell the bush what to produce, and it'll produce it."
"Do you think I could wish for anything else, Cap'n, and get it?" she inquired anxiously.
"What are you thinking of, Trot?"
"I'm thinking of wishing that these roots on our feet would disappear and let us free."
"Try it, Trot."
So she tried it, and the wish had no effect whatever.
"Try it yourself, Cap'n," she suggested.
Then Cap'n Bill made his wish to be free with no better results.
"No," said he, "it's no use. The wishes only affect the magic plant. But I'm glad we can make it bear fruit, 'cause now we know we won't starve before the wizard gets to us."
"But I'm getting tired standing here so long," complained the girl. "If I could only lift one foot and rest it, I'd feel better."
"Same with me, Trot. I've noticed that if you've got to do one thing and can't help yourself, it gets to be a hardship mighty quick."
"Folks that can raise their feet don't appreciate what a blessing it is," said Trot thoughtfully. "I never knew before what fun it is to raise one foot and then another any time you feel like it."
"There's lots of things folks don't appreciate," replied the sailor man. "If something would most stop your breath, you'd think breathing easy was the finest thing in life. When a person's well, he don't realize how jolly it is. But when he gets sick, he remembers the time he was well and wishes that time would come back. Most folks forget to thank God for giving them two good legs till they lose one of them, like I did. And then it's too late, except to praise God for leaving one."
"Your wooden leg ain't so bad, Cap'n," she remarked, looking at it critically. "Anyhow, it didn't take root on Magic Island like our meat legs do."
"I ain't complaining," said Cap'n Bill.
"What's that swimming towards us, Trot?"
he asked, looking over the magic flower and across the water. The girl looked, too, and then she replied, "It's a bird of some sort. It looks like a duck, only I never saw a duck have so many colors." The bird swam swiftly and gracefully toward the magic isle, and as it drew nearer, its gorgeously colored plumage astonished them. The feathers were of many hues of glistening greens and blues and purple, and it had a yellow head with a red plume, and pink, white, and violet in its tail. When it reached the isle, it came ashore and approached them, waddling slowly and turning its head, first to one side and then to the other, so as to see the girl and the sailor better.
"You're strangers," said the bird, coming to a halt near them, "and you've been caught by the magic isle and made prisoners."
"Yes," returned Trot with a sigh, "we're rooted, but I hope we won't grow."
"You'll grow small," said the bird. "You'll keep growing smaller every day until, by and by, there'll be nothing left of you. That's the usual way on this magic isle."
"How do you know about it, and who are you, anyhow?" asked Cap'n Bill.
"I'm the Lonesome Duck," replied the bird. "I suppose you've heard of me?"
"No," said Trot, "I can't say I have. What makes you so lonesome?"
"Why, I haven't any family or any relations," returned the duck.
"Haven't you any friends?"
"Not a friend, and I've nothing to do. I've lived a long time, and I've got to live forever, because I belong in the land of Oz, where no living thing dies. Think of existing year after year with no friends, or no family, and nothing to do. Can you wonder I'm lonesome?"
"Why don't you make a few friends and find something to do?" inquired Cap'n Bill.
"I can't make friends because everyone I meet, bird, beast, or person, is disagreeable to me. In a few minutes I shall be unable to bear your society longer, and then I'll go away and leave you," said the Lonesome Duck. "And as for doing anything, there's no use in it. All I meet are doing something, so I've decided it's common and uninteresting, and I prefer to remain lonesome."
"Don't you have to hunt for your food?" asked Trot.
"No. In my diamond palace, a little way up the river, food is magically supplied me, but I seldom eat because it is so common."
"You must be a magician, Duck," remarked Cap'n Bill.
"Why so?"
"Well, ordinary ducks don't have diamond palaces and magic food like you do."
"True, and that's another reason why I'm lonesome. You must remember I'm the only duck in the land of Oz, and I'm not like any other duck in the outside world."
"Seems to me you like being lonesome," observed Cap'n Bill.
"I can't say I like it exactly," replied the duck, "but since it seems to be my fate, I'm rather proud of it."
"How do you suppose a single solitary duck happened to be in the land of Oz?" asked Trot wonderingly.
"I used to know the reason many years ago, but I've quite forgotten it," declared the duck. "The reason for a thing is never so important as the thing itself. So there's no use remembering anything but the fact that I'm lonesome."
"I guess you'd be happier if you tried to do something," asserted Trot. "If you can't do anything for yourself, you can do things for others, and then you'd get lots of friends and stop being lonesome."
"Now you're getting disagreeable," said the Lonesome Duck, "and I shall have to go and leave you."
"Can't you help us any?" pleaded the girl. "If there's anything magic about you, you might get us out of this scrape."
"I haven't any magic enough to get you off the magic isle," replied the Lonesome Duck. "What magic I possess is very simple, but I find it enough for my own needs."
"If we could only sit down a while, we could stand it better,"
said Trot, "but we have nothing to sit on." "Then you will have to stand it," said the Lonesome Duck.
"Perhaps you've enough magic to give us a couple of stools," suggested Cap'n Bill.
"A duck isn't supposed to know what stools are," was the reply.
"But you're different from all other ducks."
"That is true."
The strange creature seemed to reflect for a moment, looking at them sharply from its round black eyes. Then it said,
"Sometimes when the sun is hot, I grow a toadstool to shelter me from its rays. Perhaps you could sit on toadstools."
"Well, if they were strong enough, they do," answered Cap'n Bill.
"Then before I go, I'll give you a couple," said the Lonesome Duck, and began waddling about in a small circle. It went around the circle to the right 3 times. Then it went around to the left 3 times. Then it hopped backward 3 times, and forward 3 times.
"What are you doing?" asked Trot.
"Don't interrupt. This is an incantation," replied the Lonesome Duck. But now it began to make a succession of soft noises that sounded like quacks and seemed to mean nothing at all, and it kept up these sounds so long that Trot finally exclaimed, "Can't you hurry up and finish that cantation? If it takes all summer to make a couple of toadstools, you're not much of a magician."
"I told you not to interrupt," said the Lonesome Duck sternly.
"If you get too disagreeable, you'll drive me away before I finish the incantation."
Trot kept quiet after the rebuke, and the duck resumed the quacky muttering. Cap'n Bill chuckled a little to himself and remarked to Trot in a whisper, "For a bird that ain't got nothing to do, this Lonesome Duck is making considerable fuss, and I ain't sure after all as toadstools would be worth sitting on." Even as he spoke, the sailor man felt something touch him from behind, and turning his head, he found a big toadstool in just the right place and just the right size to sit upon. There was one behind Trot, too, and with a sigh of pleasure, the little girl sank back upon it and found it a very comfortable seat, solid, yet almost like a cushion. Even Cap'n Bill's weight did not break his toadstool down, and when both were seated, they found that the Lonesome Duck had waddled away and was now at the water's edge.
"Thank you ever so much," cried Trot, and the sailor called out, "Much obliged."
But the Lonesome Duck paid no attention. Without even looking in their direction again, the gaudy fowl entered the water and swam gracefully away. End of chapter 15.
Chapter 16 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 16. The Glass Cat Finds the Black Bag. When the 6 monkeys were transformed by Kiki Aru into 6 giant soldiers 50 feet tall, their heads came above the top of the trees, which in this part of the forest were not so high as in some other parts. And although the trees were somewhat scattered, the bodies of the giant soldiers were so big that they quite filled the spaces in which they stood, and the branches pressed them on every side. Of course Kiki was foolish to have made his soldiers so big, for now they could not get out of the forest. Indeed, they could not stir a step, but were imprisoned by the trees. Even had they been in the little clearing, they could not have made their way out of it, but they were a little beyond the clearing. At first the other monkeys, who had not been enchanted, were afraid of the soldiers, and hastily quitted the place. But soon, finding that the great men stood stock still, although grunting indignantly at their transformation, the band of monkeys returned to the spot and looked at them curiously, not guessing that they were really monkeys and their own friends. The soldiers couldn't see them, their heads being above the trees.
They could not even raise their arms or draw their sharp swords, so closely were they held by the leafy branches. So the monkeys, finding the giants helpless, began climbing up their bodies, and presently all the band were perched on the shoulders of the giants and peering into their faces.
"I'm Ibu, your father,"
cried one soldier to a monkey who had perched upon his left ear.
"But some cruel person has enchanted me."
"I'm your Uncle Peeker," said another soldier to another monkey.
So very soon all the monkeys knew the truth, and were sorry for their friends and relations, and angry at the person, whoever it was, who had transformed them. There was a great chattering among the treetops, and the noise attracted other monkeys, so that the clearing and all the trees around were full of them. Rango, the great ape, who was the chief of all the monkey tribes of the forest, heard the uproar and came to see what was wrong with his people. And Rango, being wiser and more experienced, at once knew that the strange magician, who looked like a mixed-up beast, was responsible for the transformations. He realized that the six giant soldiers were helpless prisoners because of their size, and knew he was powerless to release them. So, although he feared to meet the terrible magician, he hurried away to the great clearing to tell Gugu the king what had happened, and to try to find the Wizard of Oz and get him to save his six enchanted subjects. Rango darted into the great clearing just as the wizard had restored all the enchanted ones around him to their proper shapes, and the gray ape was glad to hear that the wicked magician beast had been conquered. "But now, O mighty wizard, you must come with me to where six of my people are transformed into six great giant men," he said. "For if they are allowed to remain there, their happiness and their future lives will be ruined." The wizard did not reply at once, for he was thinking this a good opportunity to win Rango's consent to his taking some of the monkeys to the Emerald City for Ozma's birthday cake.
"It is a great thing you ask of me, O Rango the Gray Ape," said he,
"for the bigger the giants are, the more powerful their enchantment, and the more difficult it will be to restore them to their natural forms. However, I will think it over." Then the wizard went to another part of the clearing, and sat on a log and appeared to be in deep thought. The Glass Cat had been greatly interested in the Gray Ape's story, and was curious to see what the giant soldiers looked like. Hearing that their heads extended above the treetops, the Glass Cat decided that if he climbed the tall avocado tree that stood at the side of the clearing, it might be able to see the giant's heads. So, without mentioning her errand, the crystal creature went to the tree, and by sticking her sharp glass claws in the bark, easily climbed the tree to its very top, and looking over the forest, saw the six giant heads, although they were now a long way off. It was indeed a remarkable sight, for the huge heads had immense soldier caps on them, with red and yellow plumes, and looked very fierce and terrible, although the monkey hearts of the giants were at the moment filled with fear. Having satisfied her curiosity, the Glass Cat began to climb down from the tree more slowly. Suddenly, she discerned the wizard's black bag hanging from a limb of the tree. She grasped the black bag in her glass teeth, and although it was rather heavy for so small an animal, managed to get it free and to carry it safely down to the ground. Then she looked around for the wizard, and seeing him seated upon the stump, she hid the black bag among some leaves and then went over to where the wizard sat.
"I forgot to tell you," said the Glass Cat, "that Trot and Cap'n Bill are in trouble, and I came here to hunt you up and get you to go and rescue them." "Good gracious, Cat! Why didn't you tell me before?" exclaimed the wizard.
for the reason that I found so much excitement here that I forgot Trot and Cap'n Bill."
"What's wrong with them?" asked the wizard.
Then the Glass Cat explained how they had gone to get the magic flower for Ozma's birthday gift, and had been trapped by the magic of the queer island. The wizard was really alarmed, but he shook his head and said sadly, "I'm afraid I can't help my dear friends because I've lost my black bag."
"If I find it, will you go to them?" asked the creature.
"Of course," replied the wizard. "But I do not think that a Glass Cat with nothing but pink brains can succeed when all the rest of us have failed."
"Don't you admire my pink brains?" demanded the cat.
"They're pretty," admitted the wizard. "But they're not regular brains, you know, and so we don't expect them to amount to much."
"But if I find your black bag, and find it inside of 5 minutes, will you admit my pink brains are better than your common human brains?"
"Well, I'll admit they're better hunters," said the wizard reluctantly. "But you can't do it. We've searched everywhere, and the black bag isn't to be found."
"That shows how much you know," retorted the Glass Cat scornfully. "Watch my brains a minute and see them whirl around."
The wizard watched, for he was anxious to regain his black bag, and the pink brains really did whirl around in a remarkable manner.
"Now come with me," commanded the Glass Cat, and led the wizard straight to the spot where it had covered the bag with leaves. "According to my brains," said the creature, "your black bag ought to be here."
Then it scratched at the leaves and uncovered the bag, which the wizard promptly seized with a cry of delight. Now that he had regained his magic tools, he felt confident he could rescue Trot and Cap'n Bill. Rango the Great Ape was getting impatient. He now approached the wizard and said,
"Well, what do you intend to do about those poor enchanted monkeys?"
"I'll make a bargain with you, Rango," replied the little man. "If you will let me take a dozen of your monkeys to the Emerald City, and keep them until after Ozma's birthday, I'll break the enchantment of the 6 giant soldiers and return them to their natural forms."
But the Gray Ape shook his head.
"I can't do it," he declared. "The monkeys would be very lonesome and unhappy in the Emerald City, and your people would tease them and throw stones at them, which would cause them to fight and bite."
"The people won't see them till Ozma's birthday dinner," promised the wizard. "I'll make them very small, about 4 inches high, and I'll keep them in a pretty cage in my own room where they will be safe from harm. I'll feed them the nicest kind of food, train them to do some clever tricks, and on Ozma's birthday, I'll hide the 12 little monkeys inside a cake. When Ozma cuts the cake, the monkeys will jump out onto the table and do their tricks. The next day I will bring them back to the forest and make them as big as ever. And they'll have some exciting stories to tell their friends. What do you say, Rango?"
"I say no," answered the Gray Ape. "I won't have my monkeys enchanted and made to do tricks for the Oz people."
"Very well," said the wizard calmly. "Then I'll go. Come, Dorothy," he called to the little girl. "Let's start on our journey."
"Aren't you going to save those 6 monkeys who are giant soldiers?" asked Rango anxiously.
"Why should I?" returned the wizard. "If you will not do me the favor I ask, you cannot expect me to favor you."
"Wait a minute," said the Gray Ape. "I've changed my mind. If you will treat the 12 monkeys nicely and bring them safely back to the forest, I'll let you take them."
"Thank you," replied the wizard cheerfully. "We'll go at once and save those giant soldiers."
So the party left the clearing and proceeded to the place where the giants still stood among the trees. Hundreds of monkeys, apes, baboons, and orangutans had gathered round, and their wild chatter could be heard a mile away.
But the gray ape soon hushed the babble of sounds, and the wizard lost no time in breaking the enchantments. First one and then another giant soldier disappeared and became an ordinary monkey again, and the six were shortly returned to their friends in their proper forms. This action made the wizard very popular with the great army of monkeys, and when the gray ape announced that the wizard wanted to borrow 12 monkeys to take to the Emerald City for a couple of weeks, and asked for volunteers, nearly 100 offered to go, so great was their confidence in the little man who had saved their comrades. The wizard selected a dozen that seemed intelligent and good-tempered, and then he opened his black bag and took out a queerly shaped dish that was silver on the outside and gold on the inside. Into this dish he poured a powder and set fire to it. It made a thick smoke that quite enveloped the 12 monkeys as well as the form of the wizard, but when the smoke cleared away, the dish had been changed to a golden cage with silver bars, and the 12 monkeys had become about 3 inches high and were all seated comfortably inside the cage. The thousands of hairy animals who had witnessed this act of magic were much astonished and applauded the wizard by barking aloud and shaking the limbs of the trees in which they sat. Dorothy said, "That was a fine trick, wizard," and the gray ape remarked, "You are certainly the most wonderful magician in all the land of Oz." "Oh, no," modestly replied the little man. "Glinda's magic is better than mine, but mine seems good enough to use on ordinary occasions. And now, Rango, we will say good-bye, and I promise to return your monkeys as happy and safe as they are now." The wizard rode on the back of the hungry tiger and carried the cage of monkeys very carefully so as not to joggle them. Dorothy rode on the back of the cowardly lion, and the glass cat trotted as before to show them the way. Gugu the king crouched upon a log and watched them go, but as he bade them farewell, the enormous leopard said, "I know now that you are the friends of beasts, and that the forest people may trust you. Whenever the Wizard of Oz and Princess Dorothy enter the forest of Gugu hereafter, they will be as welcome and as safe with us as ever they are in the Emerald City." End of chapter 16. Chapter 17 of The Magic of Oz by L. Frank Baum. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Chapter 17. A Remarkable Journey. "You see," explained the Glass Cat, "that magic isle where Trot and Cap'n Bill are stuck is also in this Gillikin country, over at the east side of it, and it's no farther to go across lots from here than it is from here to the Emerald City. So we'll save time by cutting across the mountains." "Are you sure you know the way?" asked Dorothy. "I know all the land of Oz better than any other living creature knows it," asserted the Glass Cat. "Go ahead, then, and guide us," said the wizard. "We've left our poor friends helpless too long already, and the sooner we rescue them, the happier they'll be." "Are you sure you can get 'em out of their fix?" the little girl inquired.
"I've no doubt of it," the wizard assured her, "but I can't tell what sort of magic I must use until I get to the place and discover just how they are enchanted."
"I've heard of that magic isle where the wonderful flower grows," remarked the cowardly lion. "Long ago, when I used to live in the forests, the beasts told stories about the isle and how the magic flower was placed there to entrap strangers, men or beasts."
"Is the flower really wonderful?" questioned Dorothy.
"I have heard it is the most beautiful plant in the world," answered the lion.
"I have never seen it myself, but friendly beasts have told me that they have stood on the shore of the river and looked across at the plant in the gold flower pot and seen hundreds of flowers of all sorts and sizes blossom upon it in quick succession. It is said that if one picks the flowers while they are in bloom, they will remain perfect for a long time. But if they are not picked, they soon disappear and are replaced by other flowers. That, in my opinion, makes the magic plant the most wonderful in existence."
"But these are only stories," said the girl. "Has any of your friends ever picked a flower from the wonderful plant?"
"No," admitted the Cowardly Lion. "For if any living thing ventures upon the magic isle where the golden flower pot stands, that man or beast takes root in the soil and cannot get away again."
"What happens to them then?" asked Dorothy.
"They grow smaller, hour by hour and day by day, and finally disappear entirely."
"Then," said the girl anxiously, "we must hurry up, or Cap'n Bill and Trot will get too small to be comfortable."
They were proceeding at a rapid pace during this conversation, for the Hungry Tiger and the Cowardly Lion were obliged to move swiftly in order to keep pace with the Glass Cat. After leaving the forest of Gugu, they crossed a mountain range and then a broad plain, after which they reached another forest much smaller than that where Gugu ruled.
"The magic isle is in this forest," said the Glass Cat, "but the river is at the other side of the forest. There is no path through the trees, but if we keep going east, we will find the river, and then it will be easy to find the magic isle."
"Have you ever traveled this way before?" inquired the wizard.
"Not exactly," admitted the cat, "but I know we shall reach the river if we go east through the forest."
"Lead on, then," said the wizard.
The Glass Cat started away, and at first it was easy to pass between the trees. But before long, the underbrush and vines became thick and tangled, and after pushing their way through these obstacles for a time, our travelers came to a place where even the Glass Cat could not push through.
"We'd better go back and find a path," suggested the Hungry Tiger.
"I'm surprised at you," said Dorothy, eyeing the Glass Cat severely. "I'm surprised myself," replied the cat. "But it's a long way around the forest to where the river enters it, and I thought we could save time by going straight through."
"No one can blame you," said the wizard, "and I think, instead of turning back, I can make a path that will allow us to proceed."
He opened his black bag, and after searching among his magic tools, drew out a small axe made of some metal so highly polished that it glittered brightly even in the dark forest. The wizard laid the little axe on the ground and said in a commanding voice,
"Chop, little axe, chop clean and true. A path for our feet you must quickly hew. Chop till this tangle of jungle is past. Chop to the east, little axe, chop fast."
Then the little axe began to move and flashed its bright blade right and left, clearing a way through vine and brush and scattering the tangled barriers so quickly that the lion and the tiger, carrying Dorothy and the wizard and the cage of monkeys on their backs, were able to stride through the forest at a fast walk. The brush seemed to melt away before them, and the little axe chopped so fast that their eyes only saw a twinkling of the blade. Then, suddenly, the forest was open again, and the little axe, having obeyed its orders, lay still upon the ground. The wizard picked up the magic axe, and after carefully wiping it with his silk handkerchief, put it away in his black bag. Then they went on, and in a short time reached the river.
"Let me see," said the Glass Cat, looking up and down the stream. "I think we are below the magic isle, so we must go up the stream until we come to it."
So up the stream they traveled, walking comfortably on the river bank, and after a while the water broadened, and a sharp bend appeared in the river, hiding all below from their view. They walked briskly along, however, and had nearly reached the bend, when a voice cried warningly,
Look out!"
The travelers halted abruptly, and the wizard said, "Look out for what?"
"You almost stepped on my diamond palace," replied the voice, and a duck with gorgeously colored feathers appeared before them. "Beasts and men are terribly clumsy," continued the duck in an irritated voice, "and you've no business on this side of the river anyway. What are you doing here?"
"We've come to rescue some friends of ours who are stuck fast on the magic isle in the river," explained Dorothy.
"I know 'em," said the duck. "I've been to see 'em, and they're stuck fast, all right. You may as well go back home, for no power can save them."
"This is the wonderful Wizard of Oz," said Dorothy, pointing to the little man.
"Well, I'm the Lonesome Duck," was the reply, as the fowl strutted up and down to show its feathers to best advantage. "I'm the great forest magician, as any beast can tell you. But even I have no power to destroy the dreadful charm of the magic isle."
"Are you lonesome because you're a magician?" inquired Dorothy.
"No, I'm lonesome because I have no family and no friends. But I like to be lonesome, so please don't offer to be friendly with me. Go away and try not to step on my diamond palace."
"Where is it?" asked the girl.
"Behind this bush."
Dorothy hopped off the lion's back and ran around the bush to see the diamond palace of the Lonesome Duck, although the gaudy fowl protested in a series of low quacks. The girl found, indeed, a glistening dome formed of clearest diamonds, neatly cemented together, with a doorway at the side just big enough to admit the duck.
"Where did you find so many diamonds?" asked Dorothy, wonderingly. "I know a place in the mountains where they are thick as pebbles," said the Lonesome Duck. "And I brought them here in my bill, one by one, and put them in the river, and let the water run over them until they were brightly polished. Then I built this palace, and I'm positive it's the only diamond palace in all the world."
"It's the only one I know of," said the little girl. "But if you live in it all alone, I don't see why it's any better than a wooden palace or one of bricks or cobblestones."
"You're not supposed to understand that," retorted the Lonesome Duck. "But I might tell you, as a matter of education, that a home of any sort would be beautiful to those who live in it and should not be intended to please strangers. The Diamond Palace is my home, and I like it, so I don't care a quack whether you like it or not."
"Oh, but I do," exclaimed Dorothy. "It's lovely on the outside, but—" Then she stopped speaking, for the Lonesome Duck had entered his palace through the little door without even saying goodbye. So Dorothy returned to her friends, and they resumed their journey.
"Do you think, Wizard, the duck was right in saying no magic can rescue Trot and Cap'n Bill?" asked the girl in a worried tone of voice.
"No, I don't think the Lonesome Duck was right in saying that," answered the wizard gravely. "But it is possible that their enchantment will be harder to overcome than I expected. I'll do my best, of course, and no one can do more than his best." That didn't entirely relieve Dorothy's anxiety. But she said nothing more, and soon, on turning the bend in the river, they came in sight of the magic isle.
"There they are!" exclaimed Dorothy eagerly.
"Yes, I see them," replied the wizard, nodding. "They are sitting on two big toadstools."
"That's queer," remarked the Glass Cat.
"There were no toadstools there when I left them."
"What a lovely flower!" cried Dorothy in rapture, as her gaze fell on the magic plant.
"Never mind the flower just now," advised the wizard. "The most important thing is to rescue our friends." By this time they had arrived at a place just opposite the magic isle, and now both Trot and Cap'n Bill saw the arrival of their friends and called to them for help.
"How are you?"
shouted the wizard, putting his hands to his mouth so they could hear him better across the water.
"We're in hard luck," shouted Cap'n Bill in reply. "We're anchored here and can't move till you find a way to cut the hawser."
"What does he mean by that?" asked Dorothy. "We can't move our feet a bit," called Trot, speaking as loud as she could.
"Why not?" inquired Dorothy.
"They've got roots on 'em," explained Trot.
It was hard to talk from so great a distance, so the wizard said to the Glass Cat, "Go to the island and tell our friends to be patient, for we have come to save them. It may take a little while to release them, for the magic of the isle is new to me, and I shall have to experiment, but tell them I'll hurry as fast as I can." So the Glass Cat walked across the river under the water to tell Trot and Cap'n Bill not to worry, and the wizard at once opened his black bag and began to make his preparations. End of chapter 17.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.